Hello, this is Michelle Weston with Wellness Learning Curves 2.0. This is Talk Radio 360 for Women. We're here to empower women around the world. And as usual, I've brought someone to, well, I don't know if I'm going to say that Loretta Donovan and I are going to interview, because you've heard from Loretta before, and she is has such a myriad of background education that I call upon her for conversations like we're going to have today. And not to tease you, we are going to talk about something that some people are very familiar with, and that is HIPAA. What does HIPAA mean? And also, when do you call in a patient advocate or have your caregiver get help with making sure that HIPAA, which is to protect the patient, is called upon if you had a loved one or someone that you were taking care of in another state and you weren't there with them? And these are things that happen both. It's happened personally for me. I know it's happened personally for Loretta with her kids in different states and so forth when things come up. And we really felt that this was a subject that you guys should listen to and take notes and also learn more about. And if you heard from us, you would at least have a place to start. So, Loretta, where should we start with HIPAA? I mean, because you've been involved with administration, other end of the hospital, and I've been involved in more of the healthcare team.
Yes, in the
offices.
Okay. So for your listeners, I was the chief learning officer for a healthcare system, several hospitals, about 100 private medical practices. And in that role, I was responsible for the professional development of about 6,000 people. And in that role, it was important for me and for the people that I was educating to understand what protected health information was. So protected health information obviously is covered by federal law. And when we talk about it, actually, the very first encounter I would have with an employee would be in their orientation. People may not realize that every employee is required to go through an orientation process by their healthcare employer. And so that top on the list of topics that we would cover in a one-day orientation would be, do you understand what HIPAA is and how are you going to manage your role in the institution so that HIPAA is being honored at all times and that you are not disclosing, even inadvertently, anybody's protected health information? And, you know, you may be surprised because this doesn't just cover doctors and nurses and people who are taking records and sharing them with other institutions or physicians. This covers everybody, including the cleaning staff, the transporters, the people who are delivering meals from the cafeteria to you, anybody who is moving around the hospital, who is employed by the hospital, may have information about a patient. And that's in the hospital setting, but it happens in private practice. It happens every day. So that if you have been a patient, you basically have protected health information.
And this right. And you guys, just like as layman, we know when you get in an elevator, especially at a hospital or, you know, in a faculty office building of a hospital, you'll see signs that say, please do not discuss in this elevator your patients. Just don't do it. Because everyone needs to be reminded. You know, you just can't. You are not by yourself. You do not know who's in this elevator and who knows whom. And that's what Loretta's talking about. So you've got to teach the nurses and the technicians and everyone, down to the people who are serving meals, the aides, everyone, people mopping the floors. It doesn't matter. Everybody has to be aware we are keeping this patient safe. We are not discussing anything about them in this space unless we are with the patient or with the healthcare team, you know, underneath that doctor or that group. That's it. I mean, so don't take that lightly. It's, you know, they should not be talking about it, you know, and everyone has a second that they do things, but just be aware of that. Sorry about that, people read it. But yeah, I just wanted to make sure people like, and, you know, that was like a basic, right?
I'm glad that Michelle is so passionate about it. I am too. I mean, to the point where I was sitting in a physician's office, I'm thinking about 15 years ago, and his front office staff had a possibility of closing a glass window if they were involved in a conversation. But that particular day, as I was sitting there, the window was open. The front desk person had picked up the telephone, said, "Hello, Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so," and started discussing that patient's case. And I sat there dumbfounded.
Yep.
Because all I knew was that if I really cared to be nosy, I could hear all the details of what was going on with that person, whether they were getting medication, whether a procedure was being scheduled,
what the diagnosis was.
Exactly. Is it, you all know? Kinds of things could have been discussed. I don't recall any of it. All I know is I went to that physician when it was my turn to be treated and said, "This is what you need to know. This is what was going on in the outer office today." Now, I know I'm unusual. Everybody else wouldn't do that.
But, no, I would. You and I, that's why we're friends.
But what I want people to know is that every one of us needs to be aware of the regulations. Now, what kinds of things fall under HIPAA? Well, obviously, all of the things that have to do with your particular, your name, your address, your gender, your social security number, all that stuff is private information, but so is your blood type, your diagnosis, the treatment you've had, the radiology test that you've encountered, the times and dates of all of your appointments. All of that falls under HIPAA. And whether or not you have insurance doesn't matter. In other words, everybody is covered under HIPAA. And if you have insurance, of course, that means that any insurance carrier, anybody who's billing you, is also responsible for taking care of that information. Now, you may wonder why. Well, number one is you could be taken advantage of. I mean, remember, there was a time before the Affordable Care Act when people could be denied care because of a pre-existing condition.
Yeah. And now, because of HIPAA, so let me stop for a second. What is HIPAA? This is what is called acronym. The acronym stands for Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. And this was HIPAA was created 1996. That's when the CDC actually put it into the Center for Disease Control, said, required the creation of national standards to protect sensitive patient information from being disclosed without the patient's consent or knowledge. And I'm just laying on top of what Loretta is saying. HIPAA is also known as Public Law 104-191, and it has two purposes: to provide continuous health insurance coverage for workers who lose or change their jobs, and to ultimately reduce the cost of healthcare by standardizing the electronic transmission. That's when you hear the electronic. Because it makes sure something called Epic. There's two services, but Epic is pretty much the biggest one. When your doctor's putting notes into things, when you're on MyChart for your hospital, for your faculty doctor, MyChart is under Epic. These are guards for you, and we're all trying to make sure that your information is kept your information, not their information or a window open.
Well, that's important, Michelle. You know, people don't understand that any information about their health, including their height, their weight, their blood type, everything else belongs to them. It doesn't belong to the hospital or doctor. And one of the things, I mean, I was surprised when I was at a medical meeting for women in leadership in healthcare. We had a wonderful speaker who had a man who had been involved in the Obama White House as they were making all of the regulations around affordable care and the way in which these electronic medical systems would be developed. And, you know, know, he spoke that about the instances that a lot of us encounter, unfortunately, where his wife had been ill and he wanted to get her records to be able to share them with another doctor or institution. And he found that whoever he was encountering who was providing her current care was objecting to giving him the records. Even he was having a challenge. So we will understand that, that sometimes when we want to get that information so that we could use it for good reason, sometimes we do see some barriers. But when we go through this, we have to understand, think about a hospital system or a medical system right now and all of the activities that they participate in. Okay. So it's not just patient care. There's research going on. So if that institution is collecting patient data in order to put it into a research report.
Oh, they better have your permission.
They have to have your permission. And even if you give permission, they are supposed to aggregate information. In other words, we had 100 women between the ages of 35 and 50 years old who were of this weight or this height or this ethnic group who were involved, but they can't say who those 100 women were. Okay?
Yep. Yep.
So research always is important. Number two, communications. Many of us receive in the mail or via electronic means reports of the institution's work. Okay, so at the end of the year, because most hospitals are nonprofit, they'll say, oh, we were so happy to be able to treat patients in our cancer center. Mm. But without your permission, they cannot show your picture, even without your name.
Exactly.
Because,
exactly.
Again, what it does is identify you by inference. If you are there's a picture of you at the front door of the cancer center, the inference is you are a cancer patient. You may not want the world to know that. That's your right. Okay.
Absolutely.
The other thing is fundraising. If you have been treated, like use the example of the cancer center again. If you have been treated at the cancer center and they are going to ask for people to donate money, they cannot pull your data out of the cancer center's records and mail you a request.
Nope. Not allowed. Not allowed.
So all of these things protect you. They allow you to be able to decide who knows what about you.
And don't just don't like think that you don't have the ability to say no. You have the ability to say no. You know, I'm a bariatric patient. And when I go to the doctor, you know what? I went to see the orthopedic surgeon this week. And it's normally... they normally take your blood pressure, they check your weight, they check your height, they also check what medications to keep the records up to date. But if you don't want to get on the scale, you do not have to get on the scale, okay? It's not necessary. For me as a bariatric patient, since I lost 140 pounds and I have other chronic conditions, I would be on and off a lot of scales that are different. So I make a decision. You can look in the chart. I just saw the bariatric surgeon. Please take that number from my appointment 3 weeks ago, because I don't want to have a bunch of different numbers. And that's my choice. I'm not being difficult. I'm just making a request. And we have those rights. That doesn't mean that, you know, please don't think I'm asking for a reason. You hear why I say I don't want to get on the scales, okay? Because I'm bariatric. So I don't want to have different numbers. But if you're in, orthopedics actually has a very, very safe scale. It's almost like if you ever had surgery, those big scales you get on before you go into surgery, they need to know that information, by the way, because the medications they'll give you, the anesthesia they'll give you, that's all based on your weight, your height, a lot of things. Okay. So they got to actually have that. If you have cancer or something that you get infusions for, like rheumatoid arthritis or MS and so forth, they need to put you on a scale because, again, it's going to make a difference with how much milliliters they're going to give you. So since nobody asked, and since nobody answered, I mean, like when I've done that, until the first time I asked, why do you need my weight for my infusion, the number has been decided of the milliliters, they explained to me why. And I was glad to hear that, because you're wondering, what the heck does this have to do with the price of tea in China? Well, this is to make sure that they have the right information. And again, that's going to be in your chart, and you want to keep that up. If you catch something that is wrong, look at your My Chart. I'm serious. They had me. I was diagnosed with MS in 10-2000. They had it down that I was diagnosed with MS in 2018. Wrong. And that was just a communication. I contacted the doctor through My Chart. I said, you have the wrong dates. This needs to be changed, please, as soon as possible. And they did. And the person, you know, emailed me back, you know, through My Chart email and said, it's been, you know, corrected. So that's what I'm talking about. You want all your information to be monitored all the time. Okay. And I want to know that the company, hospital, the office, the practice is getting audited every once in a while. I want to know that they are holding their end to make sure that everything is safe, as safe as it can be. We know, look, there's, you know, technology is crazy now, but as safe as it can be.
Yeah. I want to hop into a couple of examples that I've encountered, and they're kind of funky things that, you know, say, really? Yeah. The first has to do with my mother and her oldest sister. Okay. This would have taken place around 2009. Okay. My aunt had just celebrated her 100th birthday in 2008. And, there was quite a bit of notice, you know, she wasn't on the Today Show. I'm sorry. We hadn't gone as far as having to wish happy birthday, but it was out there. We're not sure exactly how. And the assumption then was that, you know, people were interested in that from just the wonder of people lasting that long. Sure. My mother was 7 years younger than she was. So one day, my aunt gets a call from a very famous medical center in New York City. And they said, you know what? We're doing a study on longevity, and we would like to take a blood sample from you and your sister and study your DNA. And so my mother called them up and wanted to speak to them, too. And she wanted to know where the records were going and what was going to happen with them. And she didn't get an answer she was satisfied with and called me. I was involved, you know, was employed in healthcare. And so I called the physician who was CEO of our hospital. And he was a researcher. And I said to him, look, this is what we're being told, that they're collecting the DNA. And he said, I want you to tell them not to get involved, because he saw implications that we didn't understand. In other words, we're starting to see this now in the public domain, but I don't think we understood the full impact of it. When people are sending their blood samples off today to get them tested so they can find their long lost relatives, they don't recognize that once that sample leaves your hand, you know, the swab you put in your mouth or however you used it, you have no control of that data. You have signed that away. And what he said to me, in effect, even in 2009, was, we don't know what they're going to do with that data. You don't know whether their names will or won't be associated with it. You don't know the implications of giving that permission. And so we need to understand, we're talking about HIPAA within the healthcare system. Remember, HIPAA is a regulation that does not prohibit companies that collect and analyze DNA for your ancestry records.
Yes.
Are going to be protective of you. So be cautious of that. That's number one. Number two, the other thing to understand is that sometimes information gets picked up even when people are being careful. In relation to the work that I do as an executive coach, I attended a session that had to do with compliance and ethics. And one of the things that I was alerted to is the fact a lot of us have Amazon's Alexa device in our homes.
Never. I will never have that. Well, I swear to God.
A lot of people
makes me nervous.
Do.
Makes me very nervous. Yeah, it just makes me nervous.
Because
that's personal.
What we don't understand is when that device is turned on, it picks up any conversation that's going on. So if you're talking about a cauliflower and you wind up getting messages in your email,
or about recipes,
about
right?
Cauliflower, don't be surprised, because all of this information is being consolidated about you. Well, that sounds all very cute, but remember, if there's a device on in your home, if there is a device that is in the pocket of someone who's walking around where you are getting medical treatment, information about you is being picked up without anybody thinking about it. So that person who may be mopping the floor in the doctor's office may wind up picking up information that they didn't care about. They were not trying to be intrusive. Mm-hmm. They were not trying to do something inappropriate. So we've got all of these ways in which information kind of seeps out, even if we don't understand it, or we may not understand the implications of giving permission for somebody to include us. If you choose to be in a medical study and you choose to sign all the paperwork that signs away your rights, you need to read everything. I know it's
absolutely paperwork. Please read it. Read all the pages. I'm sorry. Before you put your signature to something, you need to know what you're involved. You don't want to down the road, right, Loretta? Go, well, I didn't want that. You signed it.
Yes. And you may be out of the goodness of your heart. I mean, a lot of people are concerned about Alzheimer's or about cancer or about a whole lot of diseases that people are suffering from. And when somebody says, we need a sample of people who don't have that disease, who haven't got that problem to participate. And you say, well, that's great. If I can help those people who are ill or suffering from that problem, I'll be happy to be able to participate. But please recognize that once you have signed on the dotted line, you've lost control of a lot of information.
Yeah.
Okay.
You really have.
I want to hop to something else for a minute because, you know, as we talk about ourselves, not just for us, but for the people who are part of our lives. I have lost a daughter to cancer. I have been the primary caregiver for my mother and had her healthcare proxy, and, you know, and I've been a patient myself as well. So in all of those instances, I needed to make sure that I understood what was going to happen when I was being treated, whether it was going to be surgery, whether it was going to be medication, whether it was going to be a radiology study, whether I was getting physical therapy, or any of those people were. Yep. And making sure that you understand is the first thing. Asking questions. I know it's very intimidating. A lot of people see a white coat and they immediately think that person knows more than I do. Well, that may or may not be true.
Under one category, by the way.
Yes. No, but you know, one of the things, Michelle and I share an interest in narrative medicine. And by participating in organizations that promote that, I have learned that many physicians doing basically the right thing. They are using the way in which they were trained to treat a certain disease as they understood it, have overlooked all the other social determinants of health, which have to do with your family history, the meals that you eat, the community that you live in, all those.
Where you came from. Is your family from the DR, PR, from France? Where are you from?
Yeah. So if they are thinking that you are a generic person, and we know there's no such thing as a generic person, that you are actually a specific person is important for them to be able to treat you well. So that's where the questions come from. When they assume that you're going to show up every Tuesday from 2 to 4 o'clock for 6 weeks to do X, you have to say to them, well, why? Is it have to be that time, that day, that frequency? number one. If you're going to get a certain amount of medication, as Michelle was wisely pointing out before, your height and weight are not just something that you want to hide all the time. Sometimes you want to make sure it really gets out there. Okay. Yes,
especially with infusions and anesthesia. Seriously. Even pain meds, you guys, pain meds, that still is determined on the size of you. All of those things. You know, there was this theory when we had Tuskegee happen, a horrible thing down south in regards to African-American prisoners, and they didn't get permission from them to do stuff. They made a decision, they, meaning healthcare teams, whoever was working on this quote study about syphilis, Black people have a higher pain tolerance. Okay, let me just tell you something. No, that is an untruth. No. It's like, why we have to look at that? Why are we having issues with making sure that women of color who are pregnant, who are delivering, get the same care as their counterparts who are white? And those are the things we have to know. We have to make sure that there is a standard. It's called a standard. What is the standard of care? How are we going to say it's going to be this, 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 and this, so that everyone gets that standard of care, not just some, not some people who are in, you know, the top floor who are paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to be in a hospital, you know, in their own room and blah, blah, blah. That's not, we're talking everyone who walks in those doors should get the same care. Yeah. And both Loretta and I believe that, you know, whether, you know, when she talks about leadership in a hospital, understand something. Even if you're an RN or an NP or PA, when you come in, you still have to go through training and orientation for that hospital. Everybody has different systems and different things that they want done. Of course, there's standards of certain things, excuse me, that we have for nurses, but what if it isn't long enough? I heard from my friend who's a nurse down in San Antonio, they've cut the learning orientation down from 8 weeks to 4 weeks now. It's not enough time, she said. They need their nurses to go through more training in the specific department they were in. And short shrifting people, even the healthcare teams, is not okay for anyone. It doesn't benefit the patient or the healthcare team and the professionals. It really doesn't.
Let's go back to the, you know, advocacy in general, though. We had an incident where my mother was hospitalized, and I happened to have been out of town when she was transferred from a rehabilitation center back to the hospital. So came back from my business trip quickly, visited where she was, and observed the level of care she was getting, the interaction with a clinical staff, and discovered that she had been administered of a medication without our knowledge or permission. What do you do then? Actually, you're entitled to a consultation. This is not something that's optional. This is in healthcare law. It's HIPAA allows for it. Yep. If you have a healthcare proxy for someone, or you are interested in what is the treatment that you personally are getting, you are entitled to call together those people who have been involved. This could include the nurse manager on that unit, any nurses or nursing staff that interacted with you, anybody who was involved as a technician in any way, shape, or form, physicians, including your own physician or hospitalists who are involved. All of those people have to come together in one meeting, not sequentially at different times, because they have to tell you what they did do, didn't do, how they did it, and you
and
have
why? A- why? You know, sometimes they change a medicine. Why are you changing this medicine?
Yes. In other words, and this is within the hospital environment, of course. If something like that happened and you were being treated as an outpatient, you might have this under, you might have a Zoom call, you might have a telephone conversation, but again, You are entitled to have your questions answered. You are entitled to say you will or will not participate. Now, if you're getting advice and you from a physician, and you are choosing not to participate for whatever reason, and it could be ethical, it could be religious, it could be just personal preference, you have a right to make that decision for yourself. You might be asked to sign something that says, I decline that treatment. But, there is nothing that says that anyone has a right to require you to go through any medical experience, be treated in any particular way without your consent. Now, one of the other things that happens around healthcare, as it happens, is billing.
Oh, God, billing.
You know, I think a lot of us have watched things online about people who have been billed for procedures they didn't have or for things that they didn't know they experienced, and they were really concerned, and sometimes for very, very large amounts of money, because there is no healthcare that's inexpensive at this point. So the very first thing is read the bill. I mean, for heaven's sake, you know, if no matter where you are, don't pay anything unless you go item by item and you know what it is.
Yep. And the other thing is, don't pay a bill the first time you get it. It has to go through at least 2 to 3 cycles for the health insurance company to pay the bill. And sometimes the doctor's office or the hospital will go back and something will be paid and they'll say, no, you owe us for this, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. Make sure, especially people who are older, don't just pay the bill because you're like, oh, this could affect my credit rating. Don't get some help. Ask a patient advocate, ask someone in your family how they feel about this. Please just, I don't want you like laying out money, because once you pay that $768 bill, you don't get that money back if insurance pays them, by the way. So they could be paid twice, guys. Loretta was talking about a story where, you know what? Sometimes doctor's offices ask for information and then they bill directly insurance. You know what? For some people, they prefer to bill, to get the bill, pay the bill to the doctor, and then submit the bill with a form to their health insurance company, because they will probably get more money back being the health insurance, the person who's being covered by health insurance, as opposed to, let's say, if the rate was $225, the doctor, if they submitted it, may get back $150, whereas the patient would probably get the $225 back if it was a, you know, realistic thing for like eyes or dentistry or something like that. Take that time if your company does that. Please take the time, because we don't want you to lay out money that you don't have to. That's why some of us pay very high premiums, you know, especially those of us who are entrepreneurs who work for ourselves. Make sure that you are protecting you. That's why we pay for it.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that sometimes happens inadvertently is that there's a coding error at the doctor's office.
Sure.
I haven't done this for a number of years, but there was a time that, you know, as chief learning officer, I was responsible for seeing that a large number of people were trained in the latest coding. Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
So, you know, spend a lot
of time. Coding means if you have a diagnosis, they can put things under coding. Okay. If you were, had A1C or insulin resistance, that would have a code. If you were someone who was, who had a diagnosis of rheumatoid arthritis, there's a code. And as Loretta's saying, sometimes those are updated. You also notice something else. It's called a provider ID. Every provider, every doctor, every PA, every NP and nurse practitioner, a physician's assistant, they have a provider number. You want to make sure that's on there. You are allowed to know what their provider ID number is, because if you're with a company and their insurance has you getting referrals and you get any pushback from getting a provider ID number, which is exactly what you need in order to make sure that your health insurance company covers that doctor so you don't get a surprise bill. Okay, I don't want you to get surprise bills, you guys. You are allowed to get that number. If the office says, no, we do not have to, actually, it's against the law.
Yeah. Actually, most physician and dentist provider numbers you'll probably find online. You'll be surprised.
Thank you.
That's the easiest way to get it. I want to go back to this question of billing, and then I want to talk about referrals because Michelle alluded to that. So if a bill is coded improperly, it might be that there are two or three interpretations of one particular incident where you were treated. That isn't because the doctor's office is trying to be peculiar. And it may be that the person who was doing the coding didn't realize which one to pick, and they just used instinct. So if it may be that the wrong one would give you a reimbursement of $10 and a right one would give you a reimbursement for $100, it makes a lot of difference. That's why you should not only call the doctor's office, but you should call the insurance company and say to them, well, why did you decline this? Or why did you pay this a certain way? If you tell them what you experienced and the medication or treatment that you got, and they'll say, you need to go back to the doctor's office. It appears that they were in error as they were coding it.
Yeah. And also, sometimes you'll find this. This is really interesting. So keep this in mind. A doctor who's on faculty of a hospital could have two offices that he works out of. Okay. Mm-hmm. Orthopedic surgery. My orthopedic surgeon works at 32nd Street, and he also works at the main campus where another office is. I want you to know and make sure, this is very strange, that the office that you are going to, that doctor is covered at. Don't be surprised. I was surprised. You know what? I was supposed to see a doctor at, and she was at two places, and I had to schedule at the 28th Street campus in order for me to use her under my health insurance. I know that sounds so weird. It's like, well, she has another office. What the heck difference does it make? Obviously, with your health insurance, it does make a difference. It could be because it's attached to faculty. It could be sometimes, you know, it could be a standalone practice that you go to, like we have Concord here. Make sure that you're doing also your due diligence. I don't want you to be surprised. In New York, I don't know how you are in Connecticut, Loretta, but we've had the Surprise Bill Act for a while now. And if you got
that's a federal law now.
Now it's federal, imagine here in New York, if I got some bill and I know what the heck that was, it was absolutely incorrect. You can send it up to Albany and it can be, re-looked at. And that's important. Now that it's federal, that makes me even happier as a patient advocate, because sometimes you get a surprise. And
all kinds of surprises. I mean, my husband has been treated by the same primary care physician who's an internist for several years. For reasons that we don't understand, the insurance company decided that this physician was a geriatrician, which meant he was a specialist. That's a $35 difference on an office visit.
Very interesting.
Was being billed for a specialist. So, you know, it's funny things like that. It's like, why? What happened? Well, if you do that frequently enough, you know, to see the doctor three or four times a year, $35 extra each time, you know, that would be a nice meal out. Okay, I want to talk about referrals, because this is another question of federal law. Okay. Even though it is not a bad idea for your primary care physician or specialist to send you to somebody else who is more expert in whatever you need help with, and it's never a terrible idea for them to give you an idea of whom to go to, they may not demand that.
Okay.
You have a choice of whoever you want to treat you. Now, making a decision about that, I mean, my husband actually was in academic medicine, and so we have the habit of looking up someone's credentials before we would see them for the first time.
Me too.
where did they go to undergraduate school, medical school? Where were their residencies? Did they have scholarships? Have they received research grants?
Yeah.
What are they really interested in? What is they known for doing well? Have they received awards? Those are things you'll want to know. So when someone says, here, call Dr. So-and-so, this is where you should go for that, say, thank you very much. I'll look into it.
Absolutely. You can. You can look into that person. You can also see where else. I just saw, as I said, the orthopedic surgeon, and I'm going to go have PT. You know what was nice? Not all offices have this, but please ask. The woman at the front desk gave me the referral, and she goes, did you know the doctor give you a specific person to see, or would you like a generalist of PT facilities that we feel strongly are good ones? Wow, that's like gold. I said, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now I have this list that I know the orthopedic surgeons at this hospital in this office said, these are the people we're comfortable with treating our patients. That's a good thing.
Yes. And that happened. I mean, as my mother left the hospital where we had the unhappy experience, she finally went to assisted living and needed to be hospitalized again because it was in a different portion of Westchester County, New York, a different hospital. And again, they said, as Michelle had the experience, would you like a list of rehabilitation facilities? And the person from social services who was so helpful gave us a list. We looked down the list and we saw one that my husband had actually visited patients in when he was in practice. And he said, I had a very good experience there. Let's go check that out again, because it had been a number of years since he'd been there.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be the perfect place for her. So, you know, that whole opportunity to say, I have an ability to look at an array of places. The same thing would happen if you looked into whether or not you want to go to a certain hospital or healthcare facility. Those places are ranked. You can go online. The state of New York, the state of Connecticut, probably in New Jersey, I'm not as familiar with that. You can go on and you can look at the safety ratings.
Yes.
Leapfrog is a place where they will tell you about the quality of the care in a hospital. Sounds like a very strange name, but remember, Leapfrog will tell you whether or not there are patients who are getting infections after surgery,
whether they
are picking up other diseases in the hospital, whether they are falling when they shouldn't be allowed out of bed.
Yep.
All those kinds of things are recorded. So as you become a patient advocate, you want to know where you are going, whether anybody has looked at those credentials and said, what's the record of what's going on there?
Very important. And you, again, we're giving you this information because information is power. And as far as I'm concerned, information is only as good as the pass along. So we're sharing this with you because we don't want you, you know, my father was a doctor, as I've said, and everyone has clay feet, okay? They have their expertise. Do not put them on a God platform. Actually, most of them really don't want you to do that. They want you to understand that, you know, they're real people, but they have a specialty. They have a talent to be able to be a doctor. That's a gift to all of us. So don't think that you can't ask questions. Please ask questions. And that, again, falls under HIPAA. Ask questions. You are not doing anything wrong. You are actually showing that you take an interest in your own health.
Fabulous advice. And very, very important. I mean, every one of us is likely to encounter an experience where we are going to need to be cared for, that we're going to need a physician or another clinician to care for us. We want to know that our relationship with them is built on the best knowledge that we have, the best knowledge that they have, and our ability to be able to negotiate the healthcare system for ourselves.
Yep. And as we're saying, you know, really, we know what we're talking about because we've had the opportunity to work within the system, and we want to share what we know with you, because being diagnosed with something chronic, with something terminal, You know what? Your head is spinning already. Your family's heads are spinning. And if you can have some sense of, I have control over this, I want you to be able to rest in that space. And so does Loretta. I mean, from her end, it really, it's so important. And, you know, we say that, HIPAA is a very interesting, you know, that I'm still laughing. Like 1996, Loretta, that was like 5 minutes ago, right? You know, the other thing that is since the 1980s, and that's probably why I referred to that, is there's something called ethics. And in our category under healthcare, it's bioethics. That means biomedicine, the ethics of biology, meaning medicine. When I started to study before I actually got my master's, I went through Loyola University, Chicago, and learned bioethics and health policy. That was one of the smartest things I probably did to help others with and myself, because the ethics that doctors and nurses and anyone, healthcare teams, swear off on when a doctor receives their degree, they're saying, do no harm. That's like a really old adage, do no harm. And that's what we want. We want people who will do no harm. Yes, you get to see cases on the TV where things happen. I'm still going to say this to you. Those are rarer than you think. I don't think there's as many cases of a poor care than good care with most doctors and hospitals. I'm not going to, I believe a glass is half full. So maybe that's me, Loretta, but I'm going to believe, right?
Yeah, I hope most people are basing their decisions about health based upon what you see on TV. It is not normal. Believe me, when I see someone who's in the operating room 1 minute doing brain surgery in the emergency room and 5 minutes later, and they're taking care of somebody who has been in an accident, and 5 minutes later, they're delivering a baby. It's a little off. Unless you were in a rural hospital about 1,000 miles away from everybody else, that wouldn't happen.
It's, you know, and that's a really interesting bit of information. I mean, we want you to know. We really, really do. And, you know, you'll also know here in New York City, if you got in a really bad accident, God forbid, knock on wood, you guys, knock on wood. I'm going to knock on my head, knock on wood, where you'd probably want to be taken to if you were, you know, in Midtown. So you'd want to go to Bellevue. And some of you are going to go, Bellevue is a hospital for everyone. Yeah, but they have the A-level trauma surgery at trauma care. And an A-level trauma care is a very high trauma care. There are other hospitals with A-level. Look for that. Look and see what the level of trauma care is in the ER. All right. Mm-hmm. If you've had something major, I'm not talking about a broken leg or, you know, an allergy reaction, that, you know, there's lots of good ERs, but there's a reason why when things happen, people are looking for the best trauma team.
Yeah. And you know, with that in mind, understand that, when you are placed in an ambulance, I mean, depending upon where you live, yes, you may not have a choice in some instances, you know?
Yeah.
And so don't be alarmed if someone says, I'm going to have to take you to, and they name the hospitals that is the closest distance to where you are. I mean, those of us who live in the suburbs outside of New York City live with that kind of thing every day. But you should also know that a lot of the people who are going to come and take care of you, those emergency medical professionals who are with that that ambulance, are fabulously trained. I mean, you know, all of the ways in which we are receiving care, from, you know, having a tiny little splinter that's gotten infected, removed at the, you know, at the urgent care center, up to being rushed to an emergency facility or given care. I mean, you know, I want to leave everybody with this understanding, perhaps. We've all been watching over the last week as Princess Kate has disclosed to the world that she is suffering from cancer. I hope your heart's all went out to her. Whether or not you're interested in the royal family.
Doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter.
I recommend Mantelof, and remember, this is a 42-year-old mother of three children who unfortunately is ill. She's in the public eye. Mm. People were, what can I say, inordinately interested in what was going on with her.
And wanted more details. And yes, you know what?
They wanted details that were very important.
Think of HIPAA. They don't have HIPAA in England. Maybe they should get a good dose of that. No, that's nobody's business. Yeah. She has cancer. That should be serious enough for all of us to be more empathic, to have more compassion and patience. She's allowed to share what she wants to share. It doesn't matter. Her sister-in-law, who also had her father-in-law has a cancer. We don't need to know exactly what it is. What difference would it make to us? What about who also was diagnosed with skin in the family? Redhead.
Ferguson.
Yeah, Sarah Ferguson. Married to Prince Andrew, now divorced. But understand, she has skincare. She's more in the eye. So she made a decision to take it one step up and say, I have skin cancer. She doesn't need to tell us where her melanoma is. Who cares? To have compassion and empathy and concern and regard for people, it's something that I hope we get more of. I say that because of social media. And I don't want us to lose that part that makes us a humanity of people that really care about each other and also don't feel the need to push on doors we shouldn't push on.
Yeah. At the same time, I mean, understand that you may be inclined to participate in an online group. Facebook is filled with groups of people, private groups, for people who are suffering from various diseases and need advice.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Patient advocacy at that level is a one-on-one pursuit or a one-to-a-group that you choose to participate in. You know, my own daughter, when she was very ill, became relatively well-known because she was, in her own way, a patient advocate. She spoke up even to the point of being involved with the passage of the Right to Try Bill in the state of Washington. You know, I have a photograph of her with Governor Inslee as that bill was being signed. I mean, that was her choice, though. She wanted to sit before the legislators in the state of Washington and disclose her health issues and talk about why she wanted patients to have a choice to be able to go beyond the norms of treatment. And that law was eventually passed during the Trump administration. So it's a federal law. The Right to Try law means you can actually say, you know, I know that's not the standard of care for me to be able to use these four drugs to be able to deal with my illness, but these drugs are on the market. My doctor is allowed to use them, and I choose for him or her to be able to make that decision with me. So that's another aspect, the whole Right to Try initiative, so that everybody is not getting, you know, XYZ care for XYZ illness.
Because there are a lot of doctors out there. I'm fortunate to be with somebody who's a big researcher, and he has his own research center. I want, you know, when he says, which is very rare, that he'd like to switch a medication for me, but he's waiting for it to be approved by the FDA, the CDC, NIH, go through all those steps. I take him very seriously. And we've been waiting for a specific drug. I still have more questions. Why switch me now? I talk about this with you guys on this show and when I speak to groups, because, as I said, information is power. But secondly, I, knock on wood, have done a lot of individual lifestyle changes to make my MS less symptoms. I'm more symptom free. I don't have as many symptoms as some do. We don't know why people get certain symptoms. We don't, you know, there's a lot of questions there, but anything I can do that could help somebody else have a better quality of life, that's why I created Wellness Learning Curves 2.0. I wanted to share and impart to you integrative tools and strategies that you can help yourself with. And does that put me in the line of fire? Sure. But I'll take that as a hit. I think that the more educated we become about the many chronic conditions, especially in the United States, that people have, not just one, but sometimes a couple, I want you to be able to help yourself and not just depend on a doctor to hand you pills or do infusions or give you medicine. I want you to understand changing your diet with less inflammatory foods may help you. I want you to understand that moving and building up core strength, if you have a challenge of getting up and down from a chair because of weakness, I want you to understand you can help you. You don't have to call the doctor and ask him, can I go to Pilates? Just go to Pilates, go to a yoga class just to give yourself that 45 minutes to just recenter yourself. If that would help you have a better quality of life. And Loretta, you've been through this yourself and with your family and others around you. It makes a difference.
It makes a tremendous difference. You know, I think one of the things we come to realize is that knowing ourselves, I mean, self-knowledge, what's our value system? What's our belief system? Where did we come from? Who has influenced our thinking? How have we evolved as a person? That becomes an important cornerstone of then making a decision as to what we can and can't do, what we will or won't do as we take care of our health. And being open, you know, if we allow ourselves to be able to take a minute to think about whether or not a suggestion has merit, not based upon secondhand bad information. I mean, one of the things I constantly say to people is pay attention to who you are allowing to influence you. It's because if you don't, you become a follower for no particular reason, except that it becomes really comfortable. It becomes a bad habit. You want to be able to use the best information you can get your hands on. And a lot of us know everybody goes to Google to be able to see whether or not something should be defined a certain way, treated a certain way. Guess what? If you're doing that, at least take a look at what you're Googling. I mean, I'd rather you went to look at the Cleveland Clinic or the Mayo Clinic
for
healthcare than you were going to look at whether or not somebody who is marketing a certain brand of off-label medication or vitamins is out, is the source. Because there are a lot of reasons that a big institution will give you great information. Number one, they're doing research. Number two, the people who are employed there are already peer-reviewed and vetted. Number three, they have a tremendous store of knowledge from all the people they've treated before. So you want to make sure you're using the best sources and still making a decision that's informed yourself.
Absolutely. And, you know, look, I'm in New York, she's in Connecticut. You know, I'm very fortunate. I have a lot of amazing hospitals and doctors and have a plethora of choice here. And if you're finding that you're more limited, do things. My sister had a number of conditions. She ended up doing something that for her was a very smart thing. And thankfully, her husband was a teacher then, and it was under his insurance, his health insurance. She went to the Mayo Clinic in Minneapolis, in Minnesota.
Rochester, Minnesota, yeah.
Right, because they had a different take on taking all these pieces, because they work as a team, to help her create a better plan on diet and things like that, and to help her. And that was really useful. And you may find that you need to reach out and do that homework. Cleveland Clinic site is always up. Mayo Clinic, they are great sites for a lot of information. That doesn't mean, it's just that Google, like using Wikipedia, you know, it's not a real like dictionary, right? You do know that, right? Okay, you guys. I mean, it's just a collection of things that people put up there. And just
anybody can edit it. So
and anyone can edit it, no matter what you put up, even if it's right, somebody could come in and say, but blah, blah, blah. So just be aware of where you're getting your information from. All right. And do look, even online for my doctors, it tells me how many research articles and projects they're working on. I want to know that. I want to know that they are ingrained in what they're doing. It's important for them to continue to learn. That's what that tells you. They are that much have such an interest in their field, they want to continue to find answers for their patients. And those are the kind of doctors that we want you to stick around with. Yeah. Loretta, thank you so much for coming on and talking about this.
My pleasure. I'm so glad we were able to spend this time to be able to share this important information with your listeners.
I think so too. You know, around the world, just know, you know, America has its own system, but I still think it's applicable anywhere you are. Ask questions, make sure that you understand where you are. Is this the right fit for you? No, there is no shame in asking for a second opinion. And I'll tell you the truth, for chronic conditions and terminal, a third opinion. It's okay. Nobody should be insulted. Doctors should not be insulted if you're asking for another person to give their two cents. Okay? So we wish you the best, and I'll see you back at Wellness Learning Curves 2.0. Any questions, you can reach me at mjwellnessnavigator.com, and I'll see you around the clock. Thanks again, Loretta.
You're welcome.